Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode on Thursday, July 23rd, 2026, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. School voucher advocates sue to keep ESA reform measure off the November ballot. Judge hands Ohio's former prisons chief sweeping control over Arizona prison health care. GOP legislative leaders Mays to defend Arizona deportation law in court. High Court says public comment on Arizona elections manual is not required. And let's get started. Our first story focuses on education and election 2026. School voucher advocates sue to keep ESA reform measure off the November ballot. Save Our Schools Arizona said the lawsuit was, quote, predictable from opponents who know the Protect Education Act will pass. By Caitlin Sievers, July 20, 2026. The Goldwater Institute is attempting to convince a court to block the Protect Education Accountability Now Act from the November ballot by disqualifying tens of thousands of voter signatures supporting it. The Citizens Initiative, headed by public schools advocacy organization Save Our Schools Arizona, turned in more than 420,000 signatures to the Secretary of State on the July 2nd deadline. That's well over the 256,000 signature threshold needed to qualify for the ballot. But the conservative Goldwater Institute, on behalf of school voucher parents and school choice advocates and the Arizona Free Enterprise Club, said in the lawsuit filed Monday that more than 73,000 of those signatures should be disqualified because the circulators who collected them weren't qualified or properly registered, or they included inaccurate or insufficient information on their petition sheets. The backers of the initiative to reform the private school voucher system panned the signature challenge as, quote, predictable. They're doing this for one reason only. They know it will pass in November. This is the latest in a series of attacks from out-of-state, billionaire-funded organizations like the American Federation for Children, aimed at leaving Arizona's voucher program simply as it is, plagued by waste, fraud, and abuse, the Protect Education Act campaign wrote on Facebook. In the suit, the private school voucher advocates call the Protect Education Act an initiative measure that would largely dismantle Arizona's groundbreaking Empowerment Scholarship Account Program, which offers parents choice and independence to secure the best educational experience for their child's unique needs. Even if all the signatures challenged in the lawsuit were disqualified, the Protect Education Act would still have a 100,000 signature cushion. But the Goldwater Institute said it planned to amend the lawsuit to challenge more signatures after Secretary of State Adrian Fontes, alongside the county recorders, strikes ineligible signatures they identified and determines the signature validity rate for the petitions. After that, attorney for Goldwater, Corey Langhofer, wrote that the Protect Education Act would be below the threshold to qualify for the ballot. The Goldwater Institute was a driving force behind the creation of the ESA school voucher system, and the program is staunchly backed by the Free Enterprise Club. The Protect Education Act would put a $150,000 household income cap on participation in the Universal School Voucher Program. It would also claw back unused funds to provide to public schools, prohibit the purchase of luxury items with ESA money, and require fingerprint clearance for workers in voucher-supported schools and programs. If the Protect Education Act makes it onto the November ballot, it will compete with a referral from the Republican-controlled state legislature aimed at enshrining ESA protections into the state's constitution. The legislature's ballot referral, pushed through in the last hours of the legislative session in June, would make the Protect Education Act moot. In a Monday statement, the Goldwater Institute wrote that the Protect Education Act was destructive and misleadingly titled, and that it seeks to redistrict the educational freedoms of Arizona families and lock children into failing government-run schools in perpetuity. While advocates of the ESA program, including the Goldwater Institute, say that it has rigorous guardrails to prevent misspending, that hasn't been the reality, which has seen parents using voucher money on unallowed purchases like major appliances and lingerie. A spring report from the Arizona Auditor General found that the program's oversight was haphazard and riddled with gaps. In an 880-page spreadsheet that accompanied Goldwater's legal challenge, the organization pointed out 9 petition circulators who had been convicted of a felony and never had their right to vote restored, or who had been convicted of fraud, forgery, or identity theft, barring them from working as petition gatherers. Some of the convictions were for serious crimes like kidnapping, assault, and sexual abuse of a minor. Did they know who was approaching Arizona families and asking for their personal information and signatures? Michael Abate, a spokesman for the Free Enterprise Club, wrote in a statement. And how can they claim to protect children while apparently failing to properly vet the people representing their campaign? The Goldwater Institute argued that other signatures should be disqualified because the people who collected them listed a hotel address instead of their home address, didn't write their identification number on the front and back of the sheet, wrote it illegibly, or wrote different numbers on the front and back. Langhofer also challenged signatures collected by circulators who provided a non-functional telephone number or email address, or one that didn't belong to them, on their petition sheets. This is a shameless attack on Arizona's parents, funded by an out-of-state union, Victor Richies, CEO of the Goldwater Institute, said in a statement. They're trying to game the system by turning in tens of thousands of invalid signatures in an effort to destroy the most successful school choice program in the country. This won't happen on our watch. And that concludes this first story. School voucher advocates sue to keep ESA reform measure off the November ballot. Our second story is about law and government. Judge hands Ohio's former prison chief sweeping control over Arizona prison health care. The federal judge said she may override Arizona laws privatizing prison health care and capping specialist pay. By Jim Small, July 17, 2026. A federal judge on Friday appointed Ohio's former prison chief to run Arizona's prison healthcare system, giving her the sole power to determine what the state needs to do to stop violating the constitutional rights of inmates with substandard medical care. And she set the stage for nullifying 2 state laws that experts have said make it impossible to do that. Although the Arizona Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry and the plaintiffs in a class action lawsuit agreed weeks ago to appointing Annette Chambers Smith as the receiver, it didn't become official until Judge Rosalyn Silver issued an order formally naming her to the role. In her Friday order, Silver also laid out the sweeping powers that Chambers Smith, who directed the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction from February 2019 to March 2026 will have. Chambers Smith will take over all of the prison healthcare duties and authorities outlined in Arizona law. Silver laid out a number of specific things that will be fully under Chambers-Smith control. Personnel. She can hire, fire, suspend, supervise, promote, transfer, discipline, and set compensation for ADCRR employees and contract staff doing healthcare work. She can also create, abolish, or transfer positions. Contracts. She can negotiate, enforce, terminate, or renegotiate all ADCRR healthcare vendor contracts. She must give ADCRR Director Ryan Thornell and the Arizona Department of Administration 30 days' notice before amending or approving a contract that could affect indemnification or insurance. Budget. She can formulate and establish the annual ADCRR healthcare budget, and she is granted all of the financing authority over prison healthcare normally granted to the director of the agency. Policy. She can write ADCRR policies, department orders, and protocols, and she can adopt rules that will last after her term ends. Property. She can acquire, dispose of, modernize, repair, and lease property and equipment. ADCRR must assist her in those efforts. Access. She has unrestricted access to all ADCRR facilities with or without notice, plus access to outside governmental records, including AHCCCS, the state's Medicaid program. Court-ordered receivers of prison healthcare systems are rare, a point that Silver made in February when she determined that the 14-year-long court battle would not result in approved healthcare for inmates as long as the state of Arizona remained in control of the decisions. Ordering the implementation of a receivership is extraordinary, and the court has exercised caution and critical reflection in making the decision, Silver wrote at the time. But after nearly 14 years of litigation with defendants having not gained compliance or even a semblance of compliance with the injunction and the Constitution, this approach has not only failed completely, but if continued, would be nothing short of judicial indulgence of deeply entrenched, unconstitutional conduct. In her order appointing Chambers-Smith, Silver remained exasperated with ADCRR, writing that, over the course of the multi-year, interminable litigation, she and prior judges have identified entrenched, systemic failures in defendants' administration of healthcare that remain much the same now as they were when the lawsuit was first filed in 2012. Silver also made a point to direct Chambers-Smith to name individuals and agencies who obstruct her work in complying with the terms of an agreement that ADCRR and the plaintiffs reached in 2023. The judge wrote in February that the state failed to comply with 131 of the 154 quality indicators in that agreement. And those who stand in the way will be punished, she said. Any person or entity interfering with the responsibilities and authorities of the receiver, or who would otherwise attempt to thwart the performance of the receiver, pursuant to the receiver's plan and orders of the court, will be subject to a finding of contempt, Silver wrote. Chambers-Smith was directed to follow state law, regulations, and contracts as best she can, but she's not entirely bound by them. Silver wrote in her order that if compliance would interfere with constitutional care, the receiver may ask the court to waive those laws. Silver signaled that there are two specific laws which the court's expert identified as persistent barriers to constitutional care that may face judicial nullification. One is a 2009 law that requires the privatization of prison health care. Prior to that, it was managed directly by the Corrections Department, and the other is a cap on pay for specialists in the prison healthcare system. The judge also indicated that she may override the Arizona legislature's budget decisions. Chambers-Smith was given authority to decide ADCRR's healthcare budget, and if she finds the amount available in the fiscal year's budget to be inadequate, she is to notify the legislature and Governor Katie Hobbs' office. If those parties can't satisfy the receiver, Silver wrote that she may order the waiver of Arizona state laws, regulations, and contracts that interfere with the requirements and desired outcome of the receivership. Requests for comment to spokespeople for the Arizona House of Representatives and Senate were not immediately returned. Hobbs' office declined to comment. ADCRR's press office did not respond. Silver's appointment of Chambers Smith won't go into effect immediately, as ADCRR is already appealing her ruling, putting the healthcare system into receivership, and the agency has said it will ask an appellate court to delay the receiver's appointment until that appeal is heard. The appointment takes effect 21 days after 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rules on that yet-to-be-filed request for a stay of Silver's order. The class action lawsuit stretches back to 2012, when prisoners sued the department and alleged that its shoddy health care violated their Eighth Amendment right against cruel and unusual punishment. The 14 years since have been marked by escalating judicial intervention, culminating in Silver ordering the prison healthcare system into receivership. In 2014, the prisoners and the state reached a 103-point agreement on healthcare performance, but when the corrections department repeatedly failed to comply with those standards, the court twice held the agency in contempt and levied fines totaling more than $2.5 million. Following a 15-day bench trial in 2022, the court issued a 200-page order declaring the healthcare system pervasively and systemically unconstitutional. The next year, a permanent injunction was issued with specific quality indicators to assess how the prison system was complying with the court's directives. In 2024 and 2025, Silver wrote, the state repeatedly and flagrantly violated those orders, and a pilot program aimed at testing a new model for prison health care failed disastrously. It was only partially implemented at one of the two test sites and was only in place for 8 days before it was scrapped. The court's patience has run out. Too many individuals are needlessly suffering while defendants have deployed many delay tactics, Silver wrote in the February order, placing the healthcare system into receivership. The court has exercised restraint for much of this litigation, to the point that any more tolerance of unconstitutional health care becomes judicial indulgence. And that concludes this story. Judge hands Ohio's former prisons chief sweeping control over Arizona prison health care. We move next to a story on immigration. GOP legislative leaders Mays to defend Arizona deportation law in court. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, July 17, 2026. Republican legislative leaders and Attorney General Chris Mays are on the same side in a lawsuit challenging the state's power to enforce immigration law, playing defense for a 2024 law that would give state judges the authority to issue deportation orders and local police officers the power to arrest migrants. Last week, the Florence Immigration and Refugee Rights Project, which offers pro bono legal defense for many people, including people facing deportation proceedings, filed a lawsuit against the state over Proposition 314. The ballot measure includes a provision that makes it a state crime, punishable with fines and prison time, for a person to cross Arizona's southern border anywhere but at an official port of entry. Anticipating legal challenges, Republican lawmakers who wrote the ballot measure froze the enactment of that provision until 60 days after a similar law in Texas took effect. The Texas law was recently revived by a federal appeals court on May 15th, allowing the Arizona version to be enforced as soon as July 14th, according to attorneys for the Immigrant Rights Legal Group. A hearing on whether the law should be blocked while litigation continues has been set for July 24th. It's unclear whether it's possible for immigrants to be arrested under the law in the interim. Richie Taylor, a spokesman for Mays, declined to comment on whether the provision is currently enforceable. Attorneys for the Florence Immigrant and Refugee Rights Project argue that the Arizona law should be thrown out because it violates the Supremacy Clause in the U.S. Constitution, which holds federal laws above state laws. Mays, Arizona Senate President Warren Peterson, and House Speaker Stephen Montenegro are preparing to argue that the law is constitutional and should be preserved. Peterson and Montenegro, who helped write and voted for Prop 314 when it was moving through the legislature, successfully won permission to intervene in the case. The pair has defended multiple laws in court in recent years, a task ordinarily reserved for the state attorney general. The reason for that is ideological. Mays, a Democrat, frequently refuses to go to bat for laws she disagrees with, particularly anti-abortion laws. In a motion requesting the court's permission to join the case, attorney Brun W. Royston III wrote that Peterson and Montenegro are skeptical of Mays' ability to adequately defend Prop 314. Even if Attorney General Mays agrees to defend the law, she has previously expressed her opposition, Royston wrote. While the ballot measure was being debated in the state legislature, Mays released a statement denouncing it as a political distraction and warning that it would be both a burden for local law enforcement and a vehicle for discriminatory policing. Further straining law enforcement resources while implementing a measure that could very well lead to racial profiling is not the answer to creating safer communities, not to mention the havoc and harm it would do to our economy, as we saw 14 years ago with the passage of SB 1070, she said. Also known as Arizona's Show Me Your Papers law, SB 1070 was gutted by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2012, with the justices ruling that only the federal government has the power to enforce immigration law. Much like Prop 314, SB 1070 allowed unauthorized immigrants to be charged with state crimes because of their presence in the state. One provision that was among those nullified by the U.S. Supreme Court allowed unauthorized immigrants to be charged with a misdemeanor for working or looking for work in the state. Despite her vocal opposition, Taylor said that Mays is fully prepared to defend the legality of the law, which won 61% of the vote in 2024. Taylor dismissed the criticisms from Peterson and Montenegro, saying that Mays' previous stance on Prop 314 won't be a problem in court. Warren Peterson and Steve Montenegro may not understand the difference between having a policy disagreement and defending the state when it is sued, but that is the job of the Attorney General, and it's one Attorney General Mays is prepared to do, Taylor said in a written statement. And that concludes this story. GOP legislative leaders, Mays, to defend Arizona deportation law in court. Back to election 2026. High Court says public comment on Arizona elections manual is not required. By Caitlin Sievers, July 17, 2026. The Arizona Secretary of State is not required to allow public comment on new versions of the state's elections rulebook, the state's highest court wrote in a Friday opinion that explained an order the court issued 9 months prior. In the October order, the Arizona Supreme Court said that the state's election procedures manual, which tells local elections officials how to implement state law, doesn't have to follow the standard rulemaking process laid out in the Arizona Administrative Procedures Act. That order overturned a previous ruling from the Arizona Court of Appeals in a lawsuit brought by the Republican National Committee. Alongside the state and Yavapai County branches of the party, the RNC alleged that the 2023 EPM was designed to undermine election integrity in Arizona. Every 2 years, the Secretary of State, an office held by Democrat Adrian Fontes since 2023, is tasked with putting together a new EPM, which outlines procedures and rules by which county election officials should conduct elections in the state. The manual carries the force of law and must get approval from the governor and attorney general, offices also held by Democrats since 2023, before it is published. In its 2024 lawsuit, the RNC argued that Fontes violated the Administrative Procedures Act when he drafted the 2023 EPM because he only allowed 15 days of public comment on it instead of the 30. The RNC asked the court to rule that the 2023 EPM was unlawful and to block Fontes from using it. The trial court sided with Fontes, saying the APA didn't apply to the elections rulebook, but the appeals court overturned that ruling. In response to the Court of Appeals decision, Fontes allowed 30 days of public comment on changes to the 2025 version of the EPM, although he maintained it wasn't legally necessary for him to do so. The 2023 manual, as well as the 2025 version, have both been heavily criticized by Republicans, who take issue with multiple guidelines and rules that Fontes added. Fontes deleted some portions of the 2023 EPM from the new version in response to other court cases that challenged or blocked those provisions. Just last week, a federal judge blocked a provision in the 2025 EPM that prohibits people at polling places from wearing clothing, uniforms, or official-looking apparel intended to deter, intimidate, or harass voters. The judge left in place other parts of the newest elections rulebook challenged in a lawsuit by the Pima County Republican Party. Both the trial court's decision and the Arizona Supreme Court ruled that the EPM is exempted from APA rulemaking procedures because the legislature laid out a separate process specific to the creation of elections rulebook. Mandating EPM compliance with APA rulemaking requirements risks undermining the purpose and effect of the legislature's time-sensitive regulation of elections, Justice William Montgomery wrote in the High Court's Friday opinion. That process requires new drafts of the EPM to be submitted to the governor and secretary of state in October of odd-numbered years, and for them to sign off on it to be published by the end of the year. State law requires the Secretary of State to develop the manual in consultation with county officials who administer elections. The unanimous opinion made clear that Fontes was not required to provide a 30-day public comment period or any at all. Although the Secretary has invited public comment on draft EPMs in recent years, that practice is not statutorily required, Montgomery wrote. The legislature, thus, prescribed consultation with a defined group of officials, reflecting a process tailored to election administration, rather than the broadly participatory framework the APA imposes. The justices noted that members of the public could still share their opinions on the elections rulebook with their county officials, who could relay those to the Secretary of State. The High Court also pointed out that even though the Arizona legislature has amended laws concerning both the EPM and the APA several times over the years, sometimes during the same legislative session, none of the amendments to one of them mentioned or any indicated any connection to the other. The legislature has treated APA and EPM throughout their respective statutory existence as separate schemes sailing on their own charted course to their own respective destinations, Montgomery wrote. And that concludes this article. High Court says public comment on Arizona Elections Manual is not required. A reminder that you're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Continuing with Election 2026, Suck on a Salt Lick. Fontes fires back after Trump election speech, DHS Pressure on States by Jared McDonald Evoy, July 17, 2026. Arizona's top election official and top prosecutor both had strong words for President Donald Trump and his administration after a primetime speech on Thursday that was filled with false claims of widespread voter fraud. Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes bristled at the prospect of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security penalizing states that don't cooperate with the Trump administration's efforts to impose national security measures on local elections, all in the name of stopping election fraud. Although Trump has focused exclusively on the topic for much of the past decade, it is extraordinarily rare in Arizona and across Arizona, and there is no evidence to back up the outlandish claims from the president and his supporters that millions of ballots are illegally cast in every election. Mark Wayne Mullen can go suck on a salt lick, Arizona's Secretary of State Adrian Fontes told the Arizona Mirror Friday morning, referring to comments made earlier in the day by the Department of Homeland Security Secretary. Fontes has been pushing back against attempts by Trump's Department of Justice and others who have sought the state's voter roll data in attempts to prove conspiracy theories around the 2020, 2022, and 24 elections. Arizona has been at the center of election conspiracy theories after former President Joe Biden won the state in 2020. Multiple audits, court cases, and partisan reviews of that election have found no evidence of widespread voter fraud, tampering, or any other malfeasance. Attorney General Chris Mays pointed to just that in a statement released after the speech. Our own courts, our own election officials, and even the Republican Attorney General before me all confirmed the truth. Arizona's 2020 election was free, fair, and accurate, Mays said. If the conspiracies raised on Thursday were a precursor for any federal intervention in Arizona's elections, please know that I will do everything as your Attorney General to fight that. Arizona's elections are safe, secure, and successful. The president should stop lying about our elections, and Republicans running for office must denounce his dangerous rhetoric. As part of his speech Thursday night, Trump announced the release of records that often contradicted the claims he made in the primetime address. Intelligence assessments that were declassified and released Thursday night also note that attempts at widespread election manipulation were likely impossible. What Donald Trump did last night was validate everything we've done for the past several years, Fontes said, adding that Arizona's elections have been proven to be secure despite the boisterous claims from Trump and leading Republicans in the Grand Canyon state. Arizona has been front and center of the actions by the Trump administration in regards to their election efforts, with Trump's DOJ requesting documentation from a flawed partisan, quote, audit led by the Republican-controlled Arizona Senate, as well as sending former DHS Secretary Kristi Noem to the state to push unfounded allegations. The federal government has generally helped states during elections, with DHS and other federal agencies often offering support. However, that relationship is now strained, according to Fontes. Mark Wayne Mullen doesn't know what he's doing, and neither does the DOJ, given that they're 0 for 15, Fontes said, referring to the courts rejecting the Trump administration's repeated court losses in its attempts to gather voter rolls from every state, ostensibly to build a national voter database. I would rather have a partner than an adversary in the federal government. Both Fontes and voting rights advocates said that Trump's speech revealed nothing new, and they reiterated that none of the cases brought making similar allegations have passed judicial muster in Arizona and elsewhere. A strong leader wins and moves on. Donald Trump is still so fixated on 2020 that he's disclosing classified documents, or portions of them, to try to manipulate the public into believing his tired claims. Alex Goulata, the state director for All Voting is Local Action, told the Mirror. Now, 6 years later, Trump is recycling the same lies in the hopes that this time he will somehow expose what courts, election officials, and even his own supporters have already put to rest. Fontes reiterated that and also pointed to Trump's victory in 2024, which came along with Republicans taking wider margins in the Arizona House and Senate. He also said that the administration's actions show disrespect to election officials. In the years since the 2020 presidential election, during which Republicans sowed doubt in election systems by spreading evidence-free fraud claims, Arizona counties have had more turnover in local election administration than any other Western state. In fact, all 15 of Arizona's counties have experienced turnover in at least one chief election position. And that concludes this story. Suck on a salt lick. Fontes fires back after Trump election speech. DHS pressure on states. We move on to the results of the GOP primary elections in Arizona. With our first story, Andy Biggs easily defeats David Schweikert, wins GOP nomination for governor. By Caitlin Sievers, July 21, 2026. U.S. Representative Andy Biggs trounced his chief opponent, fellow Congressman David Schweikert, in the Republican primary for Arizona governor on Tuesday. Biggs, who is endorsed by President Donald Trump, had such a massive lead in the early election night results that the Associated Press called the race for him just as the Secretary of State's office posted the first batch of results just after 8 p.m. I am deeply honored to be chosen by Arizona Republicans as their nominee to defeat Katie Hobbs in November, Biggs said in a Tuesday night statement. This campaign has been driven by our grassroots supporters from the day we launched in January 2025 with a clear mission of restoring the American dream in our great state. Biggs' win was no surprise. He was widely considered the favorite and was already focused on taking on Democratic incumbent Governor Katie Hobbs before the primary, while Schweikert ran ads tying Biggs to anti-Semitism and white nationalism. Schweikert was ultimately unsuccessful in painting Biggs as too extreme to win in November, saying that he was wholly owned by Turning Point USA, a youth-oriented conservative organization that has taken an increasingly larger role in GOP electoral politics in recent years, though with little success in prominent Arizona races. During an election night party in Scottsdale, Biggs said he wanted to move past the intra-party criticism that marked some of the primary races. I want to make sure we come together, Biggs said late Tuesday. Schweikert argued to voters that he, unlike Biggs, has a history of winning general elections in competitive districts and said he knows how to market conservatism for voters. Congratulations to Andy Biggs on his primary victory. Republican Governors Association Chair Greg Gianforte, who is Montana's governor, said in a statement, throughout his early career in public service, Andy has fought to lower costs, grow Arizona's economy, unleash American energy, and secure the border. As governor, Andy will continue to put Arizona families first, while Katie Hobbs focuses on serving special interests instead of addressing affordability, increasing the supply of housing, and creating more good-paying jobs. The Democratic Governors Association released a statement criticizing Biggs for being too extreme, even for his own party. After years of pushing extreme policies that made life worse for Arizonans in Congress, Andy Biggs is running to bring the dysfunction of D.C. to the Copper State, DGA Executive Director Megan Meehan Draper said in the statement. At every turn, he's put his own extreme agenda and powerful insiders first, at the expense of everyday Arizonans. Biggs has already gone after Hobbs for accusations of involvement in a pay-to-play scheme, which Democratic Attorney General Chris Mays is investigating. He also went after Hobbs for her record on water and for not signing a piece of legislation last year that would have made Arizonans' elections more like Florida's. During his election night speech, Biggs called Hobbs recklessly incompetent and accused her of ruining the Arizona economy, being anti-police, and attacking school choice. Let's make this the year we turn Arizona red again and build the red wall and set the stage for 2028 as well, Biggs said. Minutes after Biggs was announced as the projected winner, the Hobbs campaign posted its first ads attacking him on social media. Andy Biggs has spent his career selling out Arizona families for billionaires, special interests, and even convicted sex offenders, the Hobbs campaign said in a social media post. The more Arizonans learn about Biggs, the more they'll realize he's one big problem they can't afford. And there's a note here that Jared McDonald Evoy contributed to this story. And that concludes this story. Andy Biggs easily defeats David Schweikert, wins GOP nomination for governor. Our next election story, Warren Peterson wins GOP primary for attorney general over Rodney Glassman. The veteran state lawmaker will face incumbent Chris Mays, giving voters a clear choice on the Trump administration. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, July 21, 2026, updated July 22nd. State Senator Warren Peterson defeated rival Rodney Glassman to become the Republican nominee for Arizona Attorney General. Early Wednesday morning, with Peterson leading by more than 62,000 votes, the Associated Press called the race in his favor. While neither Peterson nor Glassman earned an endorsement from Trump, Peterson's long political career in Arizona won him the backing of several local heavyweights, including law enforcement associations and gubernatorial candidate Andy Biggs, who easily won his own primary contest. Peterson will face off against Democratic incumbent Chris Mays in November, as she seeks to stay in office for another 4 years. The 2022 election that Mays won was tight enough to warrant a recount, and she ultimately came out on top by just 280 votes. During an election night watch party in Scottsdale, Peterson said the country was saved by God when Trump won the White House in 2024, and he characterized the November midterms as an opportunity for divine intervention in Arizona. An avid Trump supporter, Peterson was among those who claimed, without evidence, that the results of the 2020 election were fraudulent. He helped launch the so-called, quote, audit of the election, led by the Trump-supporting cyber ninjas, the next year, which ultimately concluded that Biden won and co-chaired the committee that oversaw the Florida company's work. And even without a concession from Glassman and ballots still being counted, Peterson celebrated his lead in the race as a victory, saying that despite being outspent, he ultimately won the primary. We beat the money, we won, he said. Peterson, who has spent 14 years in the state legislature, including a 2-year stint as head of the upper chamber, ran a hotly contested race against Glassman, a military attorney and former Democratic Tucson City Councilman, who has run unsuccessfully for a series of offices since moving to Phoenix and becoming a Republican a decade ago. Prior to that, Glassman was the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate in 2010, a campaign he lost to the late John McCain by nearly 400,000 votes. While a Democrat, he also ran twice to be chairman of the Arizona Democratic Party, losing both times. This was Glassman's second unsuccessful attempt to be the GOP nominee for Attorney General. 4 years ago, he lost the primary to Abe Hamadeh, who went on to narrowly lose to Mays. Whoever is elected Attorney General will determine which way Arizona falls on a myriad of legal issues, particularly as the Trump administration and Republican lawmakers wage culture wars in the courts. Mays has marked her time in office by opposing Trump administration policies and joining dozens of lawsuits aimed at blocking them, especially the White House's mass deportation campaign and defending access to abortion care in the wake of the state's abortion rights amendment. Meanwhile, Peterson has vowed to uphold Trump's political agenda and mobilized his position as the head of the Arizona Senate for the last 3 years to intervene in lawsuits on behalf of laws that Mays refused to defend, including a near-total abortion ban from 1864 and the state's trans-athletic ban. And amid the federal push to deport people who came to the country as children, Peterson said he would do all he could to help the Trump administration expel recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. And that concludes this story. Warren Peterson wins GOP primary for Attorney General over Rodney Glassman. Continuing with our election updates, voucher oversight fight tilts GOP superintendent primary toward Kimberly Yee over Tom Horn. The winner will face Democrat Teresa Leyba Ruiz, former president of Glendale Community College, in November, by Gloria Rebecca Gomez, July 21, 2026. Kimberly Yee is maintaining a large lead in the GOP nomination for public schools chief, a victory that would see her unseat GOP incumbent Tom Horn, who is in his second stint as the superintendent of public instruction. Late Tuesday evening, Yee led Horn with 54% of the vote, a difference of more than 32,000 votes. The winner will face off in November against Democrat and former Glendale Community College president Teresa Leyba Ruiz in the November midterms. Ruiz trounced her opponent, Brett Matthew Newby, in the Democratic primary, capturing nearly 80% of the vote. Yee was elected state treasurer in 2018 and was re-elected in 2022. Last year, she launched a bid to unseat Horn, focusing on casting the 81-year-old longtime politician as out of touch. Before that, she spent 8 years as a state legislator. The race between Yee and Horn centered around who would be a better arbiter of the state's universal school voucher system, known formally as the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts. The program, which costs taxpayers $1 billion a year, is at the heart of the GOP's school choice agenda, and Republicans have resisted regulating it, even as it has drawn criticism for resulting in purchases like diamond rings and luxury clothing. The Arizona Department of Education, which the state superintendent heads, is charged with overseeing and approving reimbursal requests. Yee positioned herself as the candidate who would best protect against fraud in the program, accusing Horn of failing to keep disallowed purchases in check. Horn's time as the top public school official was characterized by a focus on culture war issues. The Republican backed the state's trans athletic ban in court, criticized the teaching of, quote, critical race theory in schools, and launched a legal challenge aimed at making it more difficult for English language learner students to be taught in their native language. One of Horn's first actions after he took office was to set up a hotline for parents to phone in tips about teachers who discussed social or emotional learning or critical race theory, catch-all terms wielded by Republican politicians that have come to encompass any discussion of diversity or race. Yee has largely shied away from overtly referencing culture war issues, aiming to frame her candidacy as a return to basics, though the language she uses still serves as a nod to the controversial topics. Arizona children, families, and teachers deserve an education leader who will deliver real results, someone who will fight to protect their educational freedom, get back to the basics like phonics and U.S. history, and protect parental rights. I'm that candidate, Yee said in a post on social media site X. Republicans frequently frame efforts to chip away at LGBTQ visibility in the classroom as an effort to preserve, quote, parental rights. And that concludes this story, Voucher Oversight Fight Tilts GOP Superintendent Primary Toward Kimberly Yee Over Tom Horn. Next up, Trump-backed former NFL kicker Jay Feely wins CD1 GOP primary as Amit Shah leads Dem field. The three-way Republican primary in one of the country's most competitive districts sets up a November race Democrats have long targeted to flip. By Jared McDonald, Evoy, July 21, 2026. Republican Jay Feely, a former NFL kicker who played for the Arizona Cardinals, has advanced to the November election, where it seems likely he will face off against former Democratic state lawmaker Amit Shah in one of the most closely watched races in the country, where Democrats are hoping to win a seat they've long targeted. Congressional District 1 is the state's wealthiest district, spanning large swaths of Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, Fountain Hills, and North and Central Phoenix. It is also one of the state's most competitive. Although it leans red, it has been a high priority for Democrats, particularly now with an unpopular President Donald Trump threatening to drag down GOP candidates in this year's midterms. This year, with veteran U.S. Representative David Schweikert leaving the seat vacant to run for governor, National Democrats are hoping to capitalize and win a seat that has long been a top target. Schweikert lost badly to Congressman Andy Biggs in the Republican race for governor. The four-way Democratic primary election in Congressional District 1 was widely expected to come down to a contest between Shah, an emergency room physician, and Marlene Galan Woods, a former television news anchor. Tuesday night, Shah was leading Galan Woods by nearly 10 percentage points, or about 5,700 votes. The Republican primary was a three-way affair, with Feely defeating former state lawmaker Joseph Chaplick, who represented Scottsdale in the Arizona House of Representatives for 6 years, and businessman John Traubau. The Associated Press called the race for Feely shortly after the first batches of ballot returns were released Tuesday night. Shah was the Democratic nominee in 2024, though he lost to Schweikert 52% to 48%. In 2022, Schweikert squeaked by and defeated Democrat Jevin Hodge by just 3,200 votes. The midterm elections are a top priority for Republicans and Democrats alike. Republicans are hoping to maintain their majority with few seats to lose. The party currently has a 219 to 212 majority over Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives. The National Republican Congressional Committee celebrated Feely's win. As a former NFL player, business leader, and charity founder, Jay Feely understands the Valley needs fiscally conservative leadership so every Arizonan can prosper and live the American dream, NRCC spokesperson Ben Peterson said in a statement. That's why Arizonans will send Jay Feely to fight the tax and spend politicians in Washington, D.C., lower the cost of groceries, gas, and housing, and protect our public safety and quality of life. And that is this election story. Trump-backed former NFL kicker Jay Feely wins CD1 GOP primary as Amit Shah leads Dem field. In her final story, Neil DeSantis, GOP candidate who pushed election fraud claims, indicted for voting illegally. The Mirror first reported in 2024 that DeSantis had never had his rights restored following 2 felony convictions. He now faces 6 felony charges. By Jim Small, July 21, 2026. Perennial Republican candidate Neil DeSantis was indicted earlier this month for falsely registering to vote and illegally voting, both felonies, because he never had his right to vote restored after pleading guilty to multiple felonies in 2010. DeSantis currently serves as a Republican precinct committeeman in his North Phoenix legislative district, a post that is restricted to legally registered voters. In 2024, while DeSantis was running for the Arizona House of Representatives, the Arizona Mirror exclusively reported that DeSantis had never had his rights restored following those 2010 felonies. While Arizona law says that people with only one felony will automatically have their rights restored once their sentence is completed and any required restitution is paid, people like DeSanti who have two or more felonies must petition the court to get their rights restored. DeSanti didn't apply to get his rights restored until 3 days after the Mirror's report, the same day that he filed his nominating petitions for the 2024 election. DeSanti dropped that bid for office after a fellow Republican in DeSanti's district challenged his eligibility to be a candidate because he was not legally registered to vote. The court rejected DeSanti's bid to restore his civil rights. Although Maricopa County Superior Court Commissioner Christina Henderson restored DeSanti's rights in relation to a 2004 drunk driving case in which he pleaded guilty to felony endangerment, she denied his identical request in a case where DeSanti pleaded guilty to felony possession of burglary tools after he and his cousin were caught stealing a metal ramp from a commercial yard near downtown Phoenix. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office urged the court to deny DeSanti's request to have his rights restored. Henderson wrote that she denied the petition because that crime had a victim and occurred while he was on release in the drunk driving case. Denial is in the best interest of public safety, Henderson wrote on July 23, 2024. When Arizonans register to vote, they swear that the information they provide is correct, and failure to do so can result in a felony charge for false voter registration. When he registered to vote in 2012, and then in multiple subsequent voter registration updates, DeSanti declared that he is, quote, not a convicted felon or my civil rights are restored. That was not true. A grand jury impaneled by the Arizona Attorney General's office indicted DeSanti on 4 felony counts of false voter registration, one for the first time he registered in 2012, and 3 for registration updates in 2018, 2020, and 2021, and 2 felony counts of illegal voting related to the ballots he cast in November 2024 and November 2025. The indictment was handed down on July 13th. And we're going to have to leave it there because that's all the time we have for this July 23rd, 2026 edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Remember, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on demand podcasts. And don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you through our Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones, and you can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to having you join us again next week.